Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Nati jānang apanyasa panya nati ajayato. Yasmin chajane chajanang chapanya cha sawe nibbana santike ti. This is the second talk of this 2006 range retreat, and it's great being able to give a talk after listening or chanting to one of the most inspiring teachings in the whole Pali canon, the Anatta Lakkhana Sutta, the teaching which gave rise to the first five arahats in the world after the Buddha, the teaching which taught those monks just when you abandon the fuel of craving born of ignorance, then the birth is destroyed and you can know that that's happened. You know that you've completed the task of life, especially the holy life. And there's no more of this to endure ever again at the end of your life. Your parinibbana, once and for all. There's a marvelous sutta there. And the best part of it is just to show just the power of wisdom, especially the letting go of the five khandhas, not one of them being part of you, belonging to you, being constituting you, either as individual or as a whole. So basically you've got nothing to worry about because there's no one to do any worrying. There's nothing to strive for because there's no one in there to do any striving. It's only the illusion when that exists that there can be any of the suffering and the rebirth and all of this. So this is where we have to strike down that delusion, which is just such a difficult thing to do. But the way we do that is very clear with the Eightfold Path. And just reading this morning, just a little bit of a pamphlet mentioning the Mahacatarasaka Sutta. And it was emphasizing the whole point of that sutta was originally to show just how the first seven factors of the Eightfold Path are supporting factors for the last part of the path, which is your meditation, the practice of jhanas. And that's why I said at the beginning here, the famous Gata 372 of the Dhammapada, there is no wisdom without jhana. There's no jhana without wisdom. I'm going to pause there, even though the rest of it is, I can't help but say the rest, but in the one with jhana and with wisdom, if you have jhana and wisdom, only then are you in the presence of nibbana. You're knocking at the door. You're right on the edge. If you haven't got those things, no jhana, no wisdom, then you're a long way. And you have to spend years and years suffering the indignities of sickness and old age, or even getting born again. And all the problems and difficulties you face will never be overcome. They'll just come back again, again and again and again, until one finds an exit from samsara. And this evening we heard the first five monks finding that exit. What a great event that was. But the path is a path through meditation, through the jhanas. And that's what I've been teaching here ever since I took over as abbot 11 or 12 years ago, I can't remember now. But whenever we practice these meditations, it's not easy to do. And you can't expect it to be easy because you're doing something which is very subtle, very difficult, only to be done by the wise. The very fact you've come so far means you're all amazing people. But to take this further, to make use of the opportunities which you have here, we have to learn how to develop our meditation into the very levels of jhana and not settle for less. That's possible, that's on offer, and even though that you haven't got there yet, never give up. Keep on going until you make it there. So a bit of persistence is important. If you're a person who always gives up when you do things in life, you do it half-assed, as they say, a little bit and then you give up. Just what sort of life are you going to ever achieve? The people who are worthy of respect in this world are those who pushed and endured and kept on going until the very end. As the Buddha says, Kanti Paramanta Potitika, that patient endurance is the summit of the holy life. It's the most important practice to keep on going. So with that persistence, to keep on going no matter what obstacles which you face, then you must always reach a destination. But the problem is that we get frustration from time to time, that we have the inspiration and we try to aspire. These are the four aspirations you've heard me say before. You get the inspiration, aspiration, and then when it doesn't work, you get desperation, and then eventually expiration when you give up. The four aspirations. Inspiration, aspiration, desperation, expiration. But instead of getting that far, the only reason why you make that wrong turning from aspiration into desperation is because of the lack of supporting qualities. And I don't mean the supporting qualities physically, I mean the wisdom faculties. In the Mahajatavaka Sutta, he said those first seven factors of the Eightfold Path, they assist the arising of deep meditation. The factors of virtue, of right speech, action, livelihood. In a retreat situation like these, you've got them pat. You've got them really perfect. Because you're a precept, you hardly talk at all during a retreat period. You're not really sort of misbehaving. You're keeping your precepts pretty good. So those precepts there, they're all done. But if, however, you are just messing around without my knowledge, just clean up your act, don't waste this time. You know, don't sort of think that no one can see what you're doing, or you can, whatever you do in your hut, you know, no one knows, it's your own business. It's not your own business, it's my business as well. But most of you are keeping those precepts pretty well. But now we have to come to the other factors which support the development of deep meditation. And as far as deep meditation is concerned, as I said last week, to be able to observe the breath and to get to the stage of the beautiful breath is sometimes all the work which I need to do is to encourage you, to lead you, to get you, to hold your hand to get to that point. And then once you're at that point, I can just leave you alone. Because that is the pivot point of the meditation path, the beautiful breath. When you can hold your attention on that beautiful breath for long enough, the rest is pretty easy. Okay, there is some subtleties there, but at least you're getting into it. And you're spending a long time in that beautiful breath where the amount of effort required is so minimal that there has to be a feedback mechanism of more energy, more mindfulness, more insight, and a deepening of the stillness which goes into nimittas and eventually into jhanas. It's easy to give the instructions on what to do next. But the hard part for many of you is getting to the beautiful breath and staying there long enough for the whole path of meditation to start to evolve. So, because this is the beginning of the retreat, then go back and say how we can use wisdom, especially right view and right thought, and right mindfulness, especially those three factors, to try and enhance our practice of meditation. Because it's not just willpower, not just effort, remember. There's other factors to this path. It's using the wisdom power of right view. It's using the right thought and also this mindfulness. Especially the right view, the right understanding. Because just now that sutta of the Anatta Lakkhana Sutta, if you could really understand that to the max and put it into practice perfectly, there'll be nothing between you and jhanas. You are just completely let go once you understand that this body, the feelings, even the perceptions, your will, the consciousness, everything in your mind, outside your mind, is nothing to do with you. It's a natural process. Get out of the way, butt out. And if you could really do that, if you saw this was not my business, then actually see this whole process arising. You get nibbida towards your will, towards consciousness, towards feelings. And that nibbida, if this is the result of understanding as it truly is, it leads to the things fading away. The body fades away, the will, the doer, the controller fades away, the five senses fade away, the body fades away. And of course you all know what happens when the body and the five senses fade away. That's the realm of nimittas. On the edge of jhanas, it's only a short hop into the jhana realm. All these things are fading away simply because you are not fueling them. When that fuel is completely abandoned, and cut off, let go of, then that's called anupadaya. With the no more fuel, the jitta is released. That's called arahat. You cut off the fuel source. Remember, upadana is not just attachment, it's also the fuel, the craving born of ignorance. So if you're going to do that, then you'd have no problem at all of getting enlightened this evening. However, it's such a tough ask for people to do, simply because you've got ingrained habits. And sometimes those ingrained habits, they manifest as a negativity, as a resistance. I don't want to listen to this again. Remember, that's Mara talking. So, you have the opportunity. Do you really want to suffer more and more? Do you want to be free? It's up to you. But for those of you who want to be free, when you start meditating, you sit down and you close your eyes. Aim for that beautiful breath. If it doesn't happen, don't give up. Don't keep screwing up your mind and trying harder. Both are just extremes which lead to nowhere, basically, to more suffering. For those of you who give up, that's just like Kama Sukhanikano Yoga. That's one of the first extremes of the middle way. Or, one of the extremes which aren't the middle way, you should say properly. That's just indulging, giving up. I'm not talking about letting go, I'm talking about giving up the path and just indulging in your senses as you've always done. And indulging in your thoughts, believing in them, and being dragged around by this prison guard torturer called the will. And always kept in the prison of your five senses and the body, and never knowing anything more. Sometimes we're reading sort of descriptions of what Buddhism is supposed to be. And Buddhism is not just trying to make something of this world of the five senses. It's not just trying to solve the poverty of the world, solving the political problems, making sure there's no more AIDS or cancers, making sure that all the kids are well treated for, the old people are well treated for, there's orphanages and old people's home, and trying to build a sort of a perfect society. Simply because that anyone with wisdom that knows that's impossible. It's a prison we live in, and the prison is suffering. The whole point of this path is to escape, and there's an escape route which is on offer. And anyone who doesn't sort of work hard to follow that escape route is a dummy. To follow that escape route, Sila is there. We've practiced that enough. Now we're talking about samadhi. How you actually get onto that beautiful breath and take it more deeply. So you sit down, as I was saying last week, spend time. And when you come across a problem, why can't you stay with a beautiful breath? Have a look and see what's going on. First of all, you find you have your conditioned habits. It's the way that you've looked at the breath before, the way you've wasted time. Your inventory of fantasies, dreams and plans and ways of wasting time. All of those, just to know, stand back and look objectively without any personal involvement in these things. Of guilt or pride or whatever. Just let the ego butt out and just look. And if you ever have these fantasies, these dreams, these plans, when you stand back and look at these things, you say, what am I doing this for? Where does it lead? Why am I wasting my time so? And look just how many years you've been here and how much time has been wasted. And does that really lead to any think worthwhile? Do you feel good about yourself? Do you get peaceful? Do you really think you're going to get somewhere in that? You know, this is the opportunity you've been waiting for. Don't think that I'm just going to make good karma and go to some heaven realm and then get enlightened. This is the heaven realm you've been waiting for and working hard for. So don't blow this opportunity. This is it, the time, the opportunity to become enlightened. So now you have this opportunity, don't blow it. So you put that aspiration to be with the breath. And if you can't get with the breath, it means you're valuing the fantasies, valuing the dreams, valuing the plans, valuing anything else other than the meditation. Sure, it is tough at the beginning. Ajahn Chah used to say, whenever you put a tiger in a cage, it will scream, it will roar. That's its nature, but if you keep it in a cage, eventually it will calm down. So when you start to train the mind, you can expect some resistance, but be diligent, be enduring, wait for a while. At least you should have the faith that if you do the practice according to the instructions, it does lead somewhere. And by restraining, I mean make sure you just keep on that cushion. You don't just give up too easily. Once you put yourself on that cushion, this is what I'm going to do, I'm going to sit here. And then you have all these great wisdom teachings to help. If you can't stay on the breath, it means that the obstruction is so often the inability to stay in the present moment. So get on the breath first of all, and then sort of develop present moment awareness with the breath. And reflect on that present moment awareness. Any idea that you can't do this is all past moment awareness, where you carry your failures of the past into the present moment. And as any psychologist will tell you, that is what keeps the failure continuing. And it's a stupid thing to do. You are putting a huge barrier on top of yourself, in front of yourself, and it's not necessary. As the Buddha said in all of the Bhadekarata Suttas, the One Auspicious Night series of talks, and as it's quite obvious for anyone who's done any meditation, you do not need to keep carrying the past in this present moment. No one is holding a gun onto your head and saying you have to. You deliberately pick up the past and burden yourself. It's a stupid, masochistic, silly thing to do, because it's not necessary. You can let go at any time. Freedom from the past is like an open door which is right in front of you, beckoning you to walk through. But for some reason, it's your conditioned delusion, you will not do it. So I will encourage you, doesn't matter what has happened in the past, leave it alone. What will happen in the future, leave it alone. When you cut off the past and the future, dreams, fantasies, negativity, any ideas saying I can't or I can, are all sort of taken away. You can see you're freed from those psychological barriers, those pigeonholes, those judgments, those criticisms of yourself which stop you succeeding. We make the barriers. We can overcome those barriers. And all it needs is not effort, but guts. The courage born of wisdom just to let go of the past. And the courage born of lack of fear not to keep working and planning out the future, thinking that if I do this, then I'll be safe. Sometimes that idea of like safety, to make sure you've got it all worked out so things are going to be well for you, that is just one of the delusions of the ego, of the self who wants to build its retirement home or its future accommodation, a place of safety and comfort which we keep on planning for all in the future, and we forget about the comfort of the present moment, which is our only home. We're actually creating discomfort in the present by worrying so much about the future. And when you're meditating, no worry at all about the future. And focus on that, this present moment when you're with the breath. And if you can't watch the breath, isn't it a case that you're watching the past or the future? If you're dulling out into sloth and torpor, as you've heard me say, carry on. That is not the problem. Sloth and torpor disappears by itself as long as you leave it alone and don't struggle with it. It's part of the path, it disappears. But it's the other ones which are the big hurdle. And so if one can make sure that one focuses again and again in this present moment. I know that I've made so much of this in the past, I've made it almost like the first stage of the meditation to present moment awareness, but now I'm asking you to go into the breath more. When you're in the breath, you're watching the breath go in and go out, just watch, are you in the moment with the breath? And focus in that moment. At first it's going to be unpleasant focusing in the moment, just because it's like putting a tiger in a cage, it's training. There's a resistance there, and that resistance is the sense of self, just wanting to assert itself. I'm not going to do this, I'm going to do what I want to do. Why should I follow Ajahn Brahm? Why should I follow even the Buddha? I can do what I want to do. You can see that stupidity is just the sense of self, not wanting to apply itself to the path to enlightenment. So be wise. Don't get sucked into that sort of stuff. Instead, stay in a moment. When the breath is unpleasant at first, just stay with it. It's just unpleasant. Just know that with mindfulness and just persist. Because what happens if you are in the moment and you're not going off into the past or the future? There cannot be any craving, any desire, any wanting, or any sort of bad feeling. All bad feeling is comparing something of the past, lingering on the past. That's where bad feeling, guilt, sense of failure, inability, incapability comes from. If you cut the past, you cut all of that away from your mind. And all wanting, all goals are all in the future somewhere. You cut off the future, all that's gone as well. It's present moment awareness is just like this knife which cuts away 99% of the problems of meditation. So make that your first sort of tool to stay with the breath. The breath in the moment, it's already here, I can't do anything with it, it's just this. And so just stay with it. And what happens because you cut off this wriggling, squirming mind, which is always off in the past or the future anywhere other than here, because you cut that off, you start to build up mental energy. From that degree of stillness, the mind energizes, which means mindfulness gets stronger, and your breath starts to look more beautiful. This is actually how you beautify the breath, just with stillness. Just hold it there for a while, and it becomes beautiful all by itself. However, if you start wandering off past and future, doing this, changing that, controlling, manipulating, managing, you're wasting the time. Energy just gets diverted, and the mindfulness never gets strong enough to see a beautiful breath. So you have to develop that stillness and have the faith, the patience, to allow the mind to brighten up. Obviously, you have the problem of thinking, of thought. Sometimes all one needs to stop that is just to have more precision in the present moment. Sometimes I start my meditation, get so precise in the moment, there's just no space for thinking. Thinking needs time. It needs a space around this present moment, so you can think about it. You never actually think in something, you think always around it. But when you're actually in the center of it, you can't think at all. And many of you have been philosophizing enough in your life to know that thinking is a complete waste of time. It's an approximation at the very best. It's completely delusory. Everything you ever thought is not the way things truly are. It's thinking is the tool of delusion. It's a handmaiden of Mara. You should know that by now. So don't trust your thoughts. A person who stops trusting their thoughts to realize the very best of approximations is a person who can very easily settle their mind into stillness. The only reason why you keep thinking is because you believe those thoughts. If you're a negative person, you believe that, you know, that negativity is justified. And if you're someone who's got some idea or view about Buddhism or jhana or whatever, the only reason why you sort of get agitated when someone says something different or says you're wrong is because you believe those thoughts. You give them excess value. Thoughts are useful, but here they're a waste of time. Literally, you're wasting your time. So take away the value from your thinking mind. If you're a thinker throughout the day, just stand back and look, where has this thinking ever got me? Is the thinking accurate? Is it valid? All the great thinkers of history, have ever they got enlightened? All the great philosophers, even the great scientists, where have they ended up? Is that what you really want, just to be a thinker? And those people are far more trained in their thinking process than any of us will ever be. Many of you are too old to think clearly. Your brain has to be about 23, 24 to have enough neurons to have a strong mind. That's why most sort of great discoveries are made by young people. But that's the people who have trained their minds since their youth. You haven't even had that training. It's too late for each one of us. But what is important is that each one of us, doesn't matter how young or old you are, can stop that thought by not believing in it, not having faith. You know, like these Christians have some blind faith in the Bible. Many of you have this blind faith into thinking. And you should challenge that and become an atheist of thought, and stopping the worship of the God of thinking. Once you can cut that out, then when you start watching the breath, you've cut another huge obstacle to breath meditation. Time and thinking are those the greatest obstacles. So if you can't watch the breath, do some work on contemplating time, past and future. Contemplate that until you undermine its value. Contemplate thinking until you see through the con game of thought. Just like a used car salesman that sells this old bomb as this, you know, fast, expensive sports car. That's what thinking is. Just an old bomb. A useless old piece of junk which one's been carrying around for a long time. When you contemplate like that, again and again and again, you are conditioning your mind to not to believe in thought. And this whole huge amount of suffering has gone from you. Every time you suffer, why is it you've got a thinking process which is negative? And you believe it, and that's why you suffer. I don't like that monk. It's a sense of thinking which you believe in, and then it creates the emotion which makes you suffer. I can't do this, I can't do walking meditation. You believe in it and it creates a huge amount of suffering. Stop the thinking process. Don't believe in it, don't give it value. Instead, as people who have devoted, you know, this 3 months to meditation retreat, many of you are bhikkhus. You've devoted your life to the Buddha, Dhamma and the Sangha. You've got faith in these things. Instead, have faith in freedom, in enlightenment, in peace, in stillness, in letting go, in emptiness. Put your faith in the beautiful breath in this moment. So worship that, just like a person bows to the shrine of a Buddha. Bow to the beautiful breath. By bowing, I mean you submit yourself. The reason why people have always bowed is because they put their head low down. And that means that what is higher than them, they respect even more. So when you put your head down to the Buddha, all its meaning is that, yeah, that's much higher than I am. That's respect. That's worship. That's something I value, because you hold it high. So hold the present moment, the silence, the breath in this moment is really important. Worship it, have faith in it, value it. And if you value that present moment, silence, the breath, it's there for you. And the beautiful breath just is. The only reason why it goes is because you don't care for it, you don't value it, you don't worship it. Before, my retreats, I've given the simile of a baby, a mother who takes her baby to the shopping mall will never leave it on the counter of some shop and walk away and forget it. She will never drop it somewhere and forget, where did I drop my baby? Because the mother cares and values her baby. If you don't like babies, if you had $10,000 in cash in a wallet, you'd always be checking it. You wouldn't leave it somewhere because you value it. And the only reason why people lose the awareness of their breath is because they don't value it. Take it for granted. Other things are more important. They've yet to see the beauty of silence, of peace, and realize that that's what Buddhism is all about. That's what we worship in this place. That's what we believe in. If people say, do you believe in God? You might as well just say, no, but I believe in silence, in stillness, and in joy and freedom. And that's about it. And so if you care enough about the present moment, if you value it, you put it in real importance to it, it is a jewel, then it stays. So these are attitudes which one uses, ways of looking, perspectives, perceptions, which if you apply them, allow you to stay with the beautiful breath. If that doesn't work, there's all these other beautiful ways of looking. One of the other reasons why a person goes off into the future or the past or into thinking, which means away from the breath, again, they don't value, they don't like the breath, they are not content enough with the breath. And so that very often in my meditation, when I start, I build up contentment with my breath. You look at this breath as it is now, you say to yourself, this is good enough. This breath is okay for me. Okay, it's not jhana, it's not nimittas, it's not a beautiful breath, it's just an ordinary old breath going in and going out. And if you have that degree of contentment with the breath, you stay with it. Whatever you're content with, you will linger on. It's discontent moves the attention somewhere else. If you don't like this talk, if you're not content with it, you'll be thinking your own fantasies, dreams, or falling asleep. But if you're content with this, then you stay with it, you focus on it. This is how you focus on a talk. This is how you focus reading a book. This is how you focus on anything. It's a contentment which actually holds the mind. So understanding what the samadhi actually is and the cause of samadhi, this contentment, one can see now how one can maintain one's awareness on something like the breath. Not through willpower, that's just being stupid, but through developing the wisdom of contentment to say, this is the breath, this is good enough for me. And you develop that ability to be content with these things. The one who is like content with little. It's why we practice just having rag robes. And it's wonderful that You know, they've got Venerable Bodhicitta's got this amazingly beautiful rag robe. Some other people would look at him and say, my goodness, Ajahn Brahm is just such a skinflint. Can't he afford to get one of his disciples a new robe? We give all this money to the retreat center, to other things. Can't we actually buy a nice robe for this monk? And it's no, because he's content with this old rag. Isn't it wonderful? You can have contentment with these things. Sometimes you can have contentment with a rag robe. It's a great training to do. And you can have contentment with a ragged old breath. It's amazing what you can do. You don't have to have this really smooth, light breath. You can have contentment with the rag breath. So rag robe, contentment with little, just your old heart, no matter how it is, that's good enough for me. Then you can actually have your food, that's good enough for me, my heart is good enough for me. And then you can have this monastery, is good enough for me. You can have this breath, is good enough for me. You can see how much of our training outside is developing contentment. So that where we can see a breath, we also have the ability, the training, to have contentment with this one breath. And of course, if you have contentment with the breath, the mind doesn't go anywhere. It stays. And again, one gets into this process. Once the contentment is there, this is good enough. For long enough, just to hold the contentment there long enough, the breath becomes beautiful, and contentment is easy. At heart first, it's more difficult, because the breath is rough. But after a while, just like your rag robe turns into this amazing satin silk, brocaded, the most beautiful robe in the whole world, and of course you like to wash it. And this is what happens with the breath. At first, when you're content, it's just an old breath. But after a while, it turns into being something beautiful and lovely. And that means you've got to that stage, the pivot point of the meditation, that you have delight in what you're doing. So try contentment. This is good enough with the breath. If that doesn't work, you can do one of my other favorite methods is you look at this breath and just make peace with it. It's the same thing as contentment. But I find this very important because this is where I focus on the way I'm watching my mind, not what I'm watching. Sometimes in the meditation you can become too object focused. Am I watching the breath yet? Am I watching the beautiful breath? Am I watching the nimitta? Whatever it is you are observing. One of the most important aspects of the meditation, the one which gives the most success, is paying attention to how you're watching the breath, or how you're watching the beautiful breath, or how you're watching the nimitta. So I keep on saying, what's between the observer and the observed? It's very easy to get that paradigm, that framework of looking, that, you know, thinking there's an observer inside me. There on the screen is my breath, or the nimitta, or fantasy, if you like. That's on my screen. What is between the observer and that thing? Right now, when you're listening to the talk, you can use a paradigm. There's someone listening. Here is the words. How are you relating to this talk? What's between you and these words? And that's what we look at. That's where our mindfulness puts most of its focus, on this method of meditation. It's not the talk which is inspiring or which sucks. It's what you put in between which makes inspiration or suckiness. Always remember, that's what you put in there makes the world. You can be depressed. It's not the world which is depressed, it's you put depression in there, the negativity between you and whatever you experience. Understanding this technique is very effective to develop deep meditation. You can start absolutely anywhere with a tired, restless, negative mind. Put that in the perspective of your object. Here is this mind watching. and put peace in between the two of you. So you watch with peace. It's a way of enduring that restless mind. Because peace means you're not controlling, you're not judging, you're not developing negativity or positivity. You're just putting peace in between. You're just making peace, not war. You find that when you make war, you get, as I kept on saying, collateral damage. When you make war with whatever you experience, make war with the talk, war with your friends, or war with yourself, I'm hopeless, I'm terrible, I'm a complete waste of time. You are making the problem. You can solve that problem very easily. I'm good enough, this is good enough. Making peace with the moment, with yourself, with the thought, with anything. Even making peace with pain. Sometimes your body hurts. You can't sort of adjust a posture or take a Panadol or take something to escape from the pain. You can just watch it and put peace between you and the pain. Pain's out there, I'm watching, and I put peace in between. And that way the mental part of the suffering is completely abandoned and there's nothing much which is a problem anymore. Just feeling. It's what happens between you and the pain, that is where the problem lies. Put peace in there and the problem is solved. Try it. And so you put peace between you and your meditation object. Every time you have a moment where you put peace between you and the meditation object. I call that making good karma. Your meditation object, whatever you're experiencing right now, is the result of old karma. Can't do much about that. It's vipaka. So whatever you are aware of, your object is vipaka. The way you're watching it is karma. So if you want to get into deep states of meditation, you have to make good karma. Something which is kusala, skillful. So you skillfully watch this moment. If it's negative, you feel fed up, pissed off, painful, that's the result of old karma, of unskillful thinking. But what you can do now is put peace there, between you and that. I'm just watching, it's just anger, that's all. It's just negativity, it's tiredness, or whatever it is. Put peace there, so you just watch it and leave it alone. You are absolutely content with it when you put peace between you and whatever you are watching. You're letting it go. You're letting it be when you put peace between you and whatever you're observing. And if you get into that habit of putting peace between whatever you are observing and the observer, you will find you are making good karma, skillful karma. You are literally making peace. And when you make peace for long enough, there's only one result possible. You experience that peace now as your object, rather than your attitude. So whatever you watch becomes peaceful. This is how you have made peace. You've constructed out of this awful state of mind something which is very, very beautiful. This is what I mean in meditation about having dog poo and turning it into a mango. It's the way you make use of it. And I've done that many times with a tired mind or a negative mind. You just make peace with it and it transforms. And I'm quite surprised how quickly it can transform. You just feel tired, restless even, just leave it alone, you make peace with it. You put peace between you and the object. So when you're looking, it's as if you're looking through this tinted glass. So whatever you see, if the glass is tinted red, what you see is red. If the glass is tinted blue, what you see is blue. But this time you tint it with peace. Which means what you see is peace. If you can do that, you'll find you just watch this breath, or you watch whatever, and after a while the mind is peaceful. And it's easy to keep with the breath. Because you're just so peaceful, so silent, so nice. You've made peace. And there you've got peace around the breath. Because the breath is peaceful, because you put peace between you and what you've been watching, it's again much easier to watch. Remember, peace is one of the enemies of restlessness. Contentment is the enemy of restlessness, because all restlessness comes from discontent. So once you make contentment or peace, then you're on the path. If you don't want to put peace between you and whatever you're aware of, put the amazing, wonderful, powerful, loving kindness, metta, between you and the object. The door of my heart is open to this object. And sometimes I say that because that's one of my sayings, the door of my heart is open no matter what you ever do or who you are. I try and practice that to each one of you. That's why we can tolerate each one of you. That's why I can be a happy abbot. And some abbots go crazy with their disciples because they don't know how to open their heart to everybody, no matter who you are. That's a wonderful thing. No matter who you are, I can still love you all. Which means not you get attached to people, but you just embrace people for who they are, with all their idiosyncrasies and sometimes their negativities or whatever. When you can love someone for who they are, you're at peace with them. And this is what you do with your mind states, the objects of the mind. So you see the breath, the door of my heart's open to you, no matter what you feel like. Rough breath, unpleasant breath. Can you understand what opening the door of your heart is? It's present moment awareness, silence, come in breath, contentment. And when you have that attitude to your meditation, you find it works powerfully well. Loving kindness has this extra ingredient. It's naturally joyful, because that's what love is like. So it very quickly builds up joy with the breath. That's why it's a very, very effective meditation method. And I still to this day recall when I first combined metta meditation with breath meditation. I'll never forget what it did. Just huge deep meditations. And all actually during the night time, dreaming of jhanas. If you want any nice dreams, dream of jhanas. So you blissed out beforehand and blissed out at night. One of the best night's sleep, well, I don't know, we call it sleep, you could ever experience. And so these are amazing states of mind which you can do by just using these wise techniques, using wisdom and right thought and the mindfulness which keeps on putting loving kindness between you and your breath. This little breath, the door of my heart's open to you. Even when you're restless, okay, restlessness, the door of my heart's open to you as well. When you put peace, kindness, a skillful attitude between you and whatever you're experiencing, you are practicing Sammasankappa, the second factor of the Eightfold Path. It's not thoughts of lust. Lust is always wanting something. I want something in the future. I want to be different. But it's, you know, five sense pleasures. And it's not thoughts of ill will or cruelty. Now, how many times you put ill will and cruelty between you and whatever you're experiencing? And what does that do? You're just making suffering for yourself. You are the creator of your dukkha, no one else. So when you put instead loving kindness between you and what you're experiencing, you cut off all the suffering. It's just like this incredibly powerful painkiller for the mind. As if someone found this beta block or morphine, the most powerful painkiller in the world. And then here it is, and people just refuse to take it. And they want to suffer. It's crazy. So making peace, loving kindness, valuing the moment, these are all what stops the pain of the mind and allows you to meditate. And you find when you can do this, you can meditate after all. Never ever think, I can't meditate, I am hopeless. Maybe that other people can, you're born to meditate or you're not. Never think like that. That's Mara speaking. Any one of you here can do them everything. And you have the ability, and you have now the method. It's the wisdom factor you have to put in there. Not the willpower, the wisdom factor. Always remember the story of the Buddha, using willpower for 6 years before his enlightenment, and getting no knowledge, just getting stressed out. It's not willpower which is the way to enlightenment. It's the wisdom power, and this is what I've been talking about for this whole talk here today. In the present moment, putting the present moment is important. Now, taking the importance away from thinking, valuing silence, and taking the value off of this thinking mind. If you can't do this yet, stand back and contemplate thought, contemplate time, contemplate where all the restlessness comes from, and all the negativity comes from. Just don't believe it, don't get sucked in there, don't be a fool. Use your wisdom and see just all this thinking that's caused me so much problem for such a long time. I don't value it anymore. And value things like the present moment, the silence, the breath. Develop that contentment in this moment. And put peace, put loving kindness between you and whatever you're doing. Develop this generosity of surrendering to this moment. This generosity, you know, it's just when you give. And give yourself to the moment. Sometimes it's like a person who puts donations in the box and makes sure they get their tax receipt. It's only half giving. They want something back in return. If you meditate and want something back, okay, I'll do this, Ajahn Brahm, as long as I get no jhana, or at least get a nimitta by the end of this rain retreat. And if I follow all your instructions and go and get a nimitta, I'm off. You know, disrobe, find a nice girl, get married. This is, if you're trying to get something out of this, it's not giving, it's not contentment, it's not being in the moment, it's not loving kindness. It's just another business, it's wanting, it's craving, it's desire, it's controlling again. It's all this doing, willing business which causes a trouble to begin with. So when you meditate, another great attitude is, I'm just going to give my mind to this moment completely. Don't want anything back. Sit down and give my mind, my jitter, to the breath. Here you go, it's yours. And you don't sort of see if you can get a tax receipt back. I didn't get any peace, I didn't get any nimittas, I didn't get any jhanas. It's not working. That's business, that's not giving. Give expecting nothing back in return. Give 100%, give wholly. And if you do something like that, I just give myself to this meditation. I'm sitting down here, everything, you look at your mind, have this vision of your mind, no matter how you imagine it, and give it completely to the breath. It's yours. Because that means you're letting go of the self. Real giving challenges the owner. In other words, the owner just has to disappear for real giving to take place. And the owner, that self, the ego, the me, the mine, when that's suppressed with real giving, all control, manipulation, management disappears. Real giving develops that contentment, develops that peace, develops stillness. If you really give to the meditation, giving to the present moment, giving to silence, giving to the breath. The breath out there, I give you complete my mind, it's all yours. Then there has to be stillness. There's nothing left to make any movement or any agitation. This is why in that Christian tradition of the monastics in the Middle Ages, when they surrendered to God, they just gave themselves up. And because they gave themselves up to their prayer or to this moment, some of them did get into bliss states. This is because they had trained, they'd been brainwashed into giving up their will. And that's a valid path. Obviously, that when you get to those deep stages, I will explain to you, the suttas would explain to you, that what you experience is not God, even though that it's be very clear to you how people can assume that that's a union with the ultimate. It's incredibly powerful, blissful, joyful, really worthwhile a whole lifetime to experience one of those states. But it's much more than that. But anyhow, you can understand how it works. If you really want to develop your meditation, that is a valid tool to use. Give up. Surrender. But don't surrender to a god. Surrender to the breath. To the object in front of you. Don't even surrender to some idea of Dharma or Vinaya, or certainly don't surrender to a monk like Ajahn Brahm or to Ajahn Chah. Surrender to the object, something real in front of you. Give yourself completely to the breath. And then the breath will be completely with your mind. Can you understand how it becomes one-pointed? Everything becomes stable. And once that stability is there, you have the breath in mind. For long enough, it turns by its own nature into a beautiful breath. It's the stillness, the one point in the staying on one thing for long enough, without doing, without controlling. I'm not talking about using your willpower to hold the breath. You can hold the breath very well in your grip, vice-like grip of the will, but you find you can't go any further. There's no joy, it's just the power of your will. I'm going to watch the breath no matter what. You can do that, but it doesn't get you any deeper. You're on the wrong path. The dead end street, that's as far as it goes. If you use the letting go, the contentment, the loving kindness, the giving, so the being with the breath in the moment, no desire, no moving of the mind, no restlessness, just with the breath, it comes beautiful. When the mind is not doing anything, the knower receives all the power. You experience that as stillness. When the doer disappears, that's what stillness is. When the doer disappears, there's nothing to move the mind. So the mind becomes still. The doer disappearing, no managing, no controlling, no orders, no complaining, no judging, stillness comes. And from stillness, energy, power comes. Ajahn Chah said that. I know that as an experience. The more still you are, the more mindful you are. The power starts to flow into the mind. Whatever you see, whatever you hear, whatever you feel is enhanced 10, 100, 1,000, sometimes million times. Little sound, you can hear so much more. The texture of the bark of a tree, you can see so much in there. Life becomes more rich, more subtle. You're seeing more. You are awakening. The awakened one, the Buddha, the eyes of the mind are becoming wide. Even the knowing mind sees much more. As it awakens, you see the whole path of meditation very clear. You know why these things I've just said are so true. You know the path, the beautiful breath. You've awakened from the mist of delusion. And you understand, not just to this much, you know just how anyone can do this if they could only press the right buttons. That no one is hindered so that they're wasting their time being here. Anyone can do this. You just got to do it. And once you see that with a wide open mind, you also see how to go deeper. when the mindfulness increases, that also enhances, supports the deeper meditations. The mindfulness is not just seeing more. It's not just the width and depth of the seeing, but it's the joy of seeing as well. The more you see, the more delightful it is. As the mindfulness increases, the breath becomes more beautiful. You see more of the breath. It becomes more interesting. And it's just almost impossible to take your eyes off the breath. I'm talking about your mental eyes. You sit there and you just can't come out. Hours can sometimes go by. Miss your lunch. You don't give a damn about lunch. The mind is not fantasizing or dreaming. You can't feel the body. You're just delighting in this beautiful breath. As the mindfulness increases its power, and just the joy gets stronger, and the mind gets stiller, till the breath disappears and this beautiful nimitta arises. Powerful, still. Now you're really getting somewhere. All because you followed his instructions. When you get to that stage, you look back, you know the path, up to that point at least, because your mind is clear. And then you understand what needs to be done. You can even teach others up to that path, because you see clearly. If you go back into restlessness again, you can't see the path that clearly anymore. Sometimes you can start to try and watch your breath and it doesn't work, because you've forgot the wisdom of the path. But the more times you travel that path and the mind opens with the brightness of stillness, the more times you can recognize, until that path is just like this major highway in your life, always open for you to travel, so you can get into these deep meditations whenever you want. You've trained yourself, not through willpower, through wisdom power. Nati jhananga panyasa. There's no jhana for those without wisdom. This is what that word means, wisdom. You understand how to do it, and you can do it. What a beautiful thing that is. You become a monk who can meditate, who can get into joy, into deep meditations. And the more you get into those deep meditations, the more the mind is empowered with subtlety, with joy, with this discriminative power to see deeply into things, the more wise you're going to become. You can really help some people in this world. You become a wise one. But not only that, you're just on the super jumbo to enlightenment. Just once you get so far, you just can't stop. Just this snowball just rolls, and jhanas just happen. It's incredible what you see in those jhanas, and how you can see the world from afterwards. You're on the path to enlightenment. And then you sort of start reading some suttas, you hear the teachings of the Buddha, or you recite Anatta Lakkhana Sutta, and you say, wow, that is big, that is huge, it's the most beautiful thing you could ever hear. This is what it's like, and that's for you. It's there, on a platter. Or as Ajahn Chah said, the mango trees are all planted, the trees are full of mangoes. You don't even need to shake the tree, just hold your hand out and it falls. It's all been done, it's there for you. So this is what you need to do. Contentment, stillness, never give up the path. Just give up this thing inside which keeps on resisting. Give up delusion. Give up the controller. Give up stupidity. That's the talk for this evening.
Sambuddho Bhagava Bhutan Bhagavantan Abhivani
Suakato
Bhagavata Dhammo Dhamma Namasam
Supatipanno
Bhagavato Savakasa